and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the empathetic voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Richard. I think we might just have a couple of talking points for this Monday's podcast.
Just one or two, I feel. I feel a bit sad this Monday morning. I am a little bit empathetic. I feel like I've taken on a lot of the negative vibes of the last 24, 48 hours. Lots going on in the goalkeeping world. And I've got to be honest, not loads of positivity. But that being said, we are going to dissect everything that's happened. We are going to find the positives that did happen in the weekend. And also analyse, of course, some major talking points.
We are indeed an extraordinary weekend for goalkeeping. Plenty coming up, as you said, Richard, but you put a tweet out last night after the game involving Liverpool and Manchester City, and it attracted a fair bit of attention. It has affected you somewhat, so let's get into that. Let's talk about the tweet that you put out and some of the responses that you received from it.
Yeah, let's do that. I put the tweet out, and the reason that I put it out, and I'm sure that a lot of goalkeepers can empathise with this, in that when you see a goalkeeper do something in a game, you instantly feel what that goalkeeper's going through, whether that's good or bad. In the same way in which sometimes I get a real buzz when I see a goalkeeper have a fantastic performance, it's like watching a film, I guess, and you become emotionally attached to what's going on in that film. It's exactly the same for me when I watch goalkeepers play. So, of course, watching Alisson play yesterday, it did make me feel a certain way. I got a bit angry, a bit annoyed, a bit upset. And I think a lot of it was because you can attach yourself to that goalkeeper. So I put out a tweet, and the tweet I put out was, I watch a GK have a bad day and it genuinely impacts me, makes me feel bad. Any other GKs get that feeling? I do hope that the positive narrative that Alisson has built doesn't change on the back of this. And we had loads of responses, in fairness, and some really, really good responses. I'll read out a couple for the fact that we'll know the names involved. So one was Ben Foster, came back with, I know what you mean, mate. People are entitled to their opinions, and rightly so, but I bet that none of them will affect Alisson. The guy's mental strength is the biggest part of his game. He'll have people's opinions change soon enough. I also had one from Steve Mildenhall, of course, the goalkeeper coach of Swindon Town. He said, just shows to what a consistently high level these top GKs work to that these types of moments seem crazy. We shouldn't take their performances for granted. It can happen to the very best in the world, in brackets, not often, which he is, and he will be for many, many years. Loads of other responses as well. So thank you for those that did get in touch. But it was one of those moments where it takes a little while to take it in, because we know Alisson to be what he's been for so long, and the trophies that he's won and the many accolades and the many times we spoke about him positively on this podcast. And you're sat there watching it and you can't quite believe what you're seeing. I think that's fair to say. And it was from the moment he's looked to pass out to the right back with the outside of his foot and got away with that one, to then what happened over the next 5 minutes, but even over the next 20 minutes or so, just very, very bizarre.
Yep, and we will certainly get into the nitty-gritty of that. But first, let's try and start with some positivity to bring it back round. Because, Richard, it is time for Patron of the Week.
Indeed, Patron of the Week. Let's get this back on a positive note. And this week, it is Tiempo de Brota. I think I've pronounced that correctly. So nice. Thank you. We've had a flurry of patrons this week, haven't we? So very thankful for that. Is that a new hoodie that I see you wearing, Matthew?
Very good. Very good, Richard. Well, there are a few that are going to be available for our fine patrons, Richard.
There will be. And the mugs. You got me a mug, a GKU mug last week. So do keep an eye out for that. But look, as always, guys, we do appreciate your support. Thank you for supporting us. And Tiempo de Brota, you are our patron of the week.
Good stuff, Tiempo. Some correspondence before we move on?
Yeah, let's crack on.
Why not? This was sent in to us by Brian Edwards. Plenty to get through recently, so we're either going to do a correspondence special or just add them in on a quieter week. But we're quickly going to do this one. Brian says, huge fan of the show. I coach goalkeepers in the States for an MLS academy and a university here in North Carolina. Would love to hear Richard's take on goalkeepers' depth of shots from central areas. I know he's big on depth for reaction type shots and pullbacks, but what about your more standard central shots? Thanks for all the great work you do, and you'll be happy to know I have all the keepers I work with subscribe to the show as well.
Ah, fantastic. It's a good question. It's a tough question to answer, in that, of course, there are so many different variables, one of them being the defender's positioning, whether the striker that's shooting is facing the goal, back to goal, sideways on, etc., etc. But For me, as a rule of thumb, deep in terms of reaction if it's a header from 4 or 5 yards, for instance. And then similarly, I think you're quite deep if it's a shot from, say, 20 yards out, central, and nobody's challenging. And the reason I say that is because it all comes down to narrowing the angle. Well, if they're 20 yards out, you could be 4 or 5 yards from goal, but you're not narrowing the angle because of how far the ball is from goal. So if anything, the deeper you are, the more reaction time you have for a start. Also, there is always that shot that will come in from time to time that dips over your head if you're 4 or 5 yards out. Of course, being on the line, it gives you more of an opportunity to save that type of shot as well. And the other thing I'll say to this, though, of course, if then the player gets closer and closer, at some point you need to engage. So if it's a one-on-one, then of course at some point you're going to engage. And then it's the question as to, can you get close enough to do a long barrier? Can you get close enough to smother? If you can't, you always want to have enough distance between you and the striker in order to be able to give you a chance of making the save, getting a dive away if need be in order to make the save. So it's a bit of a fine art and it can change with every different situation. What we obviously tend to do on this show is you look at each one in isolation and you can judge it based on that. So there are many, many variables, but hopefully that helps in terms of a rule of thumb.
Good stuff, Brian. Thank you for sending that in. And if you would like to send anything in to us, always the same, on Twitter at GKUnion, hello at goalkeepersunion.net. Our phone number 07503673020. Richard, shall we get on with it?
Let's do it.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Well, we like to start on a positive normally, Richard, but in the interests of goalkeeping talking points, there is no other place to begin than the two biggest goalkeeping talking points of the weekend. It's David De Gea and it's Alisson. Where would you like to start?
Yes, Matthew, as much as it pains me to say, we're going to have to start with Alisson, I think. And it was, as I touched on in the intro, it was just a bizarre 20 minutes or so, it felt like, just watching that, watching one of the world's greats have such a difficult time. So I think there's no other place than Alisson to start.
Yep, Liverpool 1, Manchester City 4. Alisson Blunderland, according to Sky Sports. You just know whoever was running that control desk at the time was rubbing his or her hands at that headline. Top marks, to be fair, for creativity.
Well, I mean, look, you can look at this several different ways. I know there's a couple of tweets out there, and I actually do agree with these when they talk about mental health and everything else. Mm-hmm. To put stuff out like that isn't on. However, you're a journalist, of course, so you'll know that a lot of these headlines they'll have had in the locker for years, more than likely. The chances are they've had this for years, but just haven't had the chance to use it.
Yeah, and it's a difficult one because I thought exactly that when I saw it, because for creativity, you would see that. It's similar to the Supercaligo-ballistic Celtic are atrocious, right? All the way back in the day, whoever came up with that was absolutely buzzing. There are so many really good headlines. And when you are in that profession, you kind of think, is it my duty to put this out there? Because it's too good to miss. But you're right. A big fat strike through, I think, in terms of understanding and compassion. But should that be a consideration for someone in that job? I'd argue probably not. And more importantly, is it fair? Is it fair that they've offered that headline? And to be fair, we're not talking about a back page headline. This was just one of the graphics, wasn't it, on Sky with regards to that. But listen, let's get into some of the correspondence that we've had on this and the whole situation itself, because like you said, it was quite bizarre watching it. We've had a WhatsApp in from Rich Stevens who says, "Hi guys, just watched the Alisson error for Sterling's goal this morning and I cannot help but feel sorry for Alisson. I paused the replay after the Wijnaldum back pass and I cannot see what options he had before he made this, in quotation marks, horrific blunder. Sterling is chasing him down, meaning he can't take a touch and put his foot through it. Alexander-Arnold is stationary with the player on him, but he's the obvious player to play it to. But at the same time, the attacking team looks sharper, so I wouldn't have liked to play it either. The lack of movement and support of the outfield players is shocking in my opinion, and he plays arguably the wrong pass, but I can't see the right pass myself. If City have four people within range of the 18-yard box, as they do, then this is a team error and not the goalkeeper."
Look, it's an interesting point, and I do take on board a lot of what's been said, because I think certainly for the second or the third goal, but the second error was, it was a poor ball to play back to him when he didn't have any options, as mentioned, being closed down from his right. And of course, the obvious thing to say as well, just kick it into touch, which he might have been able to do. If he just swings a right foot at it, he probably kicks it into touch. But of course, he will have known. And again, this is all happening very, very quickly. And he's making these decisions very quickly. if he kicks it into touch, of course, what are the commentators going to say? Oh, Alisson's rattled, doesn't know what he's doing, etc., etc. So Alisson, and again, we've touched on this in so many podcasts, the way in which goalkeepers are taught to play now, has tried to pick out a pass. The interesting thing for me was just that you could see something had shifted in him. Even the pass before that, when he's tried to play out to the left back and kind of pulled it back towards the corner, wasn't his cleanest pass. And again, the ball coming back to him before for the second goal, the first error, of course, when he's then played it out to the right and he's got his second chance, ball played back to him, and he's tried to either sweep it out to the left back. I don't think he was actually trying to do that. I do think that he was trying to make a much better connection and go a bit long. Now, this then all comes back to a comment that Klopp then made after the game, which was quickly dismissed and quickly ridiculed, it has to be said. And I'm not going to back this comment up, but I do want to elaborate on this comment. And that was a comment made about his feet potentially being cold. Now, I know that we spoke about this briefly before the show, and instantly your reaction was very similar to Roy Keane's.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't actually hear the comment, so the first I'd heard of it was you saying it to me. What I would say, if that was a consideration, the worst thing you want to do, or the thing that's probably not advisable, is to grab what I would imagine was a very cold bottle of water to the side of your net and pour it all over your head. Mm. That's probably not the best thing to do if that was the case.
No, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. The bit that I will say, and look, I'm not going to try and make an excuse for Alisson here, because I think it was just one of those things. And in a similar way in which we've moved past these things very quickly in previous podcasts when it's involving a goalkeeper of Alisson's stature, standard, caliber, etc., is we are going to move on quite quickly from this. But what I would say is, if you're playing in the UK, ordinarily, and correct me if I'm wrong, and goalkeepers listening in, I'm sure that you'll have your thoughts on this. For me, January, February are the hardest months to play. You've got weather like we've currently got outside, where it's snowing, it's windy, it's freezing, it's raining, it's cold. So, of course, as a goalkeeper, where you're not moving that much in a game, you can get cold very quickly. I remember so many games where I played, and the last 20 minutes, I couldn't feel my feet. I couldn't feel my hands. And there were games where I'm genuinely thinking, I really hope the ball doesn't come anywhere near me. And I would be pacing up and down the box, running side to side, just trying to get myself warm. I'd end up doing 7 or 8 kilometres in a game just purely to try and keep the blood pumping and keep myself as warm as I possibly could. Now, in fairness, watching Alisson yesterday, something shifted. I think it was more mental than physical, but he certainly didn't look himself. You could even argue that the fourth goal, again, he doesn't move as quick as he normally does. So something shifted within him. We've all been there as a goalkeeper. We've all had those moments when that confidence has taken a bit of a knock and you're not in the right state of mind, the right frame of mind anymore. And it's almost an out-of-body experience. I'd go as far as to say that that's what it feels like. And again, you guys listening in, maybe some of you have experienced this yourself, where you suddenly don't feel in control anymore. And I wish I could give a good analogy or a good metaphor as to what it feels like to people who are listening in that haven't experienced it. But it is odd. That moment, the confidence just gets zapped from you. It is then, do you have the ability to build that up? Because no one else is going to make you feel good in that moment. And unfortunately for Alisson, in the same way in which we've seen the likes of Jerzy Dudek, for those that remember that game against Man United, Diego Forlan with a couple of goals in quick succession. Of course, Karius has been spoken about many times since that happened yesterday. Fabian Barthez, for those that remember the game against Arsenal when it was a couple of errors in quick succession. Look, there are many greats down the years that have had this. So as strong as he is mentally, for me, it is that one that it just shows that he is human, that it did impact him in that moment.
I don't think there's any question that he will bounce back from this at all. I think the level of the game, of course, it was a big game for Liverpool, you know, a massive game against the title rival in Manchester City. But can we not just chalk this off as a bad day at the office? Can it just simply be that Liverpool as a collective aren't playing particularly well at the moment? This is a bad game that Alisson has had, probably the only really bad game that he's had since he came to the club. Yes, there have been a couple of dubious errors from playing out from the back, but normally when Liverpool have won the game. So this is the first time that he's had an error which has been really impactful for the result because they've lost the game. But I don't think that Jurgen Klopp needed to come out and try and make an excuse. Yes, I guess he's trying to protect his goalkeeper, but at the same time, just say, do you know what? Bad day at the office. I think Alisson would be the first person to say that as well. I just think that, you know, I was watching him in the game against Burnley, and I nearly brought this up. This is going to be a classic after timer thing to say, but I nearly brought this up in the game against Burnley. Obviously, we ended up talking about the penalty that he gave away and then conceded. But that evening, Nick Pope was brilliant. But do you know what? Alisson, when I was watching that game, I also thought, he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And he looks like he's improving with every game, if that's possible at the moment. I know that yesterday can't be taken into consideration, but it does look like he is improving with every game because he's so cool, because he's so calm. But the one thing I did notice, that it was almost like he was a little bit too casual at times, and that's come to fruition yesterday. You said at the top of the podcast, the pass that he makes with the outside of his boot. Now, he did that against Burnley a couple of times and nearly got caught out, and I don't know what it is. It's almost like he's too casual and he's just playing it out from the back with the outside of his boot. Why is he doing that? Why is he playing it with the outside of his boot?
Yeah, I mean, in that situation, he was waiting, looking for someone to pass to. Now, for me, there's a trigger, or there's a certain point when it's like, it gets to the point where the danger is too much. And for me, that is where you then just go long and ordinarily scream at those around you for not giving you an angle. But he really does wait until the very last moment. And look, I agree with everything you've just said in terms of where he's at the moment. And I sincerely hope it's one where he does bounce back very quickly. The only problem I see, and this is why I put the tweet out and spoke about the narrative that surrounds him, is that we've seen it elsewhere where one mistake can suddenly lead to, not necessarily other mistakes, but let's say that five games down the line and Alisson makes another mistake. Does this then get referred to again? Like, how often do you see that with a goalkeeper? David De Gea can go a run of however many games now without a mistake. Yet when he makes one, of course, it then gets referred to that he has made several in the last couple of years. So again, we've said this on the pod about building credit, the idea of building credit. How long does he have to go until now people will look back on this and say, ah, oh, that was just a blip. That wasn't Alisson. That was someone else for those 5-10 minutes. You know, and that's the difficulty for a goalkeeper. He can't go out there next week and score a hat trick and everyone forgets about what's happened. He now has to go a period of time in order to then reset that narrative, I'd say.
In terms of credit, I think him and Edison are way out ahead with that. So yeah. I don't think he's got too much to worry about.
No, I was going to say, in the bit we haven't actually done, and interestingly, and we're not going to, because we haven't actually picked the bones out of what he did, which ordinarily we would. But I think going back to what we said about Martinez, I think it was in the last podcast, where something like this, I don't think it necessarily needs us to talk about the technique or what went wrong necessarily. Because I do just think, for me, it was as simple as, yep, a couple of passes, by the way. That's all we're really talking about, is two passes. But of course, it has been blown up in the papers today. And understandably so, as you said, from a journalist's point of view, they're going to look at this as something they have to cover and cover in a big way. But for me, I don't want to dwell too much on what happened exactly, because I do just think it was a case of he was effectively out of his mind for a period of time. And no doubt he will come back strong. He's had many tough moments in his career, of course. He's won so many things. This, no doubt, will just be a blip.
Yeah, and you know that goalkeepers of the classic mold, shall we say, perhaps before this generation, were just screaming at the TV, get rid of the thing, just clear your lines. It was all over Twitter as well. But we'll move on to the game at Old Trafford, Manchester United 3, Everton 3. One of our Zoom dates,
yes,
as per usual, Richard. And what a date it was. A roller coaster of emotions. That glass of red very nearly came through the screen at one point. We had a barrage of tweets on this one too. I'm not going to be able to get through all of them, so I'm going to pick out the best of the bunch, okay? David De Gea came into question for the first and the third Everton goals. The first was scored by Abdoulaye Doucouré. Here are some of the tweets. James Boyle, brutal goalkeeping. David Ryan, catch the thing. There was a word in between that, which I won't say. Warrior Fradness, 33, says, should do better. If it happened to me, I'd be blaming myself. Chris Parker, it looks poor, but not sure what else was on there. JGK, 136, says he should catch that, really. Was unlucky that it dropped straight to the attacker. If he had left it, he would have been okay. No protection from the team, though Everton just passed through them. Chris Helen, 1,000% his fault. David Cater, I'd say De Gea mistake for that one. Didn't try to hold it or get it away. Just got caught between the two options and did neither. And Stephen Smith, positioning was good. Think the spin on the ball threw him off. Needs to have a better touch to clear the space or knock it down in front of him. Where he touched it to basically provided the assist. Better question, why does Shaw just stop?
Look, some great tweets as always. Now, I'm actually going to start by saying, in terms of De Gea, I was more frustrated with the third goal than I was the second goal. The second one for me is a tricky one, and I do take on board everything that's been said, and I can see that the majority of people are saying that they think it's an error. Now, for me, this is an error if he could have held it and he hasn't. I'm not convinced he can hold this. I think this is just a little bit too far out of reach for him to get two hands on it, so therefore he goes with one. The problem is there's no pace on the ball, so how do you get it away? I think Gary Neville made a comment of, you know, he needs to punch it to the edge of the box. There isn't a human on earth that can punch it to the edge of the box when there's no pace on the ball and you are diving 3-4 yards from your goal. So I actually feel a bit sorry for him here, because the other alternative is that he leaves it. Now, in this case, had he left it, it wouldn't have ended up as a goal, because of course there was nobody at the far post. But you can't know that as a goalkeeper. You can't know. Look, had someone have been behind him, now imagine this, someone had been behind him running in, they'd have had an easy tap in, but he's got a hand to it and pushed it out in front like he did. We're all saying it's a great save, because in that moment it would have stopped an obvious goal. The problem is, of course, is that he gets the hand, it drops, they score, and naturally people do question him. But yeah, I'm actually more on the side of feeling a bit sorry for him, because I just don't know what else he could have done. Now, look, you guys might come back and say, no, he definitely could have held it. And if that is the case and you believe that to be the case, then that's fine. And I would then class it as an error. But I watched it several times. I don't think he can. I do think he has to come for it. And I just think he's a little bit unlucky in that it has dropped and it has ended up at the striker's feet and, of course, in the back of the net.
Not too dissimilar, that scenario that you're suggesting there, from the goal that Mason Mount scored for Chelsea against Fulham. Alphonse Areola, who parried, it was higher, wasn't it? But he parried it into the area when there was no attacker behind him. So he could have technically left it, but it's not for the goalkeeper to know that. It's more for the fullback or the centre-back, whoever it is that is in the box, to let him know that. But it's such a fast attack. It's such a split-second decision to make. Very difficult.
Well, you can't scan. And this is it. You have to remember that, of course, we're watching the TV and we're getting a view of everything that's going on. But if someone's coming in on the angle, you are focused on them. You can't turn your head for a split second because, you know, sod's law. You turn your head for a split second, see what's going on in the box or going on behind you, and that'll be the moment they shoot near post and score. So you can't scan. So, of course, you've got tunnel vision. All you're looking at is the player, and you're making the decision based on that. Now, if suddenly in the goalkeeping textbooks we decide that that ball that's played across the box you don't dive for, you actually just turn and set on your line, then, of course, we're talking about a different situation. But I think in that moment, you take the small goal. For you goalkeepers listening in, I'm sure you know what I mean on this one, where you take that small goal at your near post towards the six-yard box, and ultimately, if it does come across you and you think you can get there, you are taught to get something on it. Even if you can't hold it, ordinarily you are taught to get something on it. But again, you cannot know what's behind you.
We were interrupted on our Zoom date by none other than Jonathan Bond calling from poolside in LA, gleaming sun, which was lovely. But you actually spoke to him while we were on the call about the error.
It was funny because we were discussing it. Yeah, me and you were discussing it at the time. And just so happened that Bondy called and they had their first training session over at LA Galaxy. And he was just giving me a bit of an update as to how things were going there. And I said, look, Bondy, I'm not going to say what I think on this, but what do you think of the goal? And he was, of course, watching the game as well. And he actually said exactly what I said. And the reason he said it was that a game he played for West Brom against Newcastle, he had a very similar one. So for any Baggies fans listening in, you'll probably remember the game. It was a cup game last season. And it was a very similar situation and resulted in a very similar goal. And we had this very conversation as to what else can you do? If you can't hold it, what else can you do?
Okay, on to the third goal, the equaliser for Everton, more than 95 minutes on the clock of the 4 minutes allocated. In nips, Dominic Calvert-Lewin to equalise. Could David De Gea have done better? These are the tweets. Ian Brooks, indecision for smother the ball or split save may have worked, but he seemed unsure and created very little in the way of a barrier. Trevor Wright said he single-handedly changed the momentum of that game with the Everton first goal, but he's been like this for 3 seasons. He's somehow undroppable with a £110,000 a week goalkeeper on the bench, but Ollie's shown again and again he has no cojones. Dylan McNulty, weak as you can imagine. Henry Woodcock, I think it's the wrong choice of technique. It's nothing to do with bravery. He should have gone old school and spread his legs. He wasn't in the right area or facing the right kind of attack to employ the block. Ed Lawrence says he just bottled it like he always does. I mean, wow. Moussa Mee, it's not that he conceded here. The odds were with Calvert-Lewin. It's the fact he pulled out. Not for the first time, very similar versus Leipzig this year, and there are other instances. This is genuinely worrying, says Moussa Mee. It pains me to say, but I think it's a psychological thing, not easy. Rad Reynolds looks like he was distracted by waving for offside and was too slow to react to the first touch forward. Chris Pullen, totally agree. I thought exactly the same when I saw it, but De Gea has never been a brave goalkeeper. In my book, he'd rather concede a goal than risk getting hurt. Not sure I agree with that one. Max Burrell, the likes of Pope, Schmeichel, Edison would all come out and clatter Dominic Calvert-Lewin there. No way he should be scoring, especially with the heavy touch. Gareth McCulloch, should be throwing himself towards the ball before it leaves the striker's foot. Liam Dorsey has to go horizontal. Heads and hands be brave. Andy Johnson just needed a bit of old-fashioned goalie mentality. That's his job. Just a few more. Dean, take one for the team there and he wins us the game. Yes, it will probably hurt, but he has to be done. At PG41, such a wonderful goalkeeper. It's so hard to criticise, but he doesn't cover himself in glory. He's done this a couple of times this season. Just have to put it down to some are braver than others. John Burridge, Peter Shilton would have gone in head first. At JGK136, ideally you'd say be braver. Maybe he's too deep in the Premier League. You missed time the dive. It's a penalty, so I can understand why you don't throw yourself at it like a lower league goalkeeper would.
Yeah, some fantastic comments there. So thank you as always for getting in touch. Always appreciate all correspondence. And to be honest, I agree with a lot of what's been written there. And this, as I'm watching, I was frustrated. And it did remind me a little bit of the Leipzig goal. Now, again, we're not David De Gea, so we can't know whether it's a bravery issue or not. But the point there, and I think it was the first tweet that you read out from Ian Brooks, which I do agree with, that for me, it's the barrier at point of impact. And it couldn't have been smaller. You know, we're talking his two shins. That was all that was going to save the ball, ultimately, because he was so high and he hasn't really committed towards the ball. So the chance of him saving it were absolutely minimal. So for me, it was that. Now, is it bravery? Maybe. Again, only David De Gea can answer that. But for me, that should have been at point of impact. He should have been on the ground, face towards the ball, chest towards the ball, arms extended, legs wherever they need to be, and just create a big barrier. Now, do you know what? The ball might still go in, but you give yourself a better chance of making the save. Now, I know we're about to talk about a Kasper Schmeichel save very shortly. Now, that's a good example of where he's come out quickly, thrown himself at the ball, spread everything. He's very exposed at that moment. It could have hit him anywhere. It could be that he gets injured, etc., etc. But look, maybe I'm just saying this because I'm a goalkeeper that I broke my cheek. I've had several broken bones. Don't get me wrong. It's not a nice thing when you do break a bone or when you get a serious injury. But each time I did that, I made the save. And I wouldn't have changed that technique. And I think most goalkeepers that play in that way, and I'm not saying this to be the big I am, because God, I wish I had an ounce of the talent that David De Gea had. But what I am saying is that for me is nothing to do with talent. That's just one where if you do go and throw yourself in there, like a lot of goalkeepers do, but maybe not as many now as in years gone by. I think that's a fair comment. I think he makes a save there. I think United get the win. And in terms of the league table, of course, it would have been a huge 3 points at this time in the season. So I can understand the frustration towards David De Gea on that one.
Yeah, Max Burrell made that point as well. The likes of Pope, of Schmeichel, of Edison, they would have come out and not, I don't know whether they would have clattered Dominic Calvert-Lewin, but like you said, done anything they could. Aaron Ramsdale would have done the same thing. You know, the spread that he puts on a number of goalkeepers in the Premier League.
Well, do you know what the counter argument is? Because David De Gea is very good when he comes out and does the long barrier, makes a lot of saves. And actually, David De Gea very rarely gets injured. You know, the counter argument can be that if he comes out, throws himself, makes a save, but is then out for 3 months because he breaks his cheek or breaks his jaw, then people might be saying, well, that's ridiculous. Why are you being so stupid in that moment? So that is the counter argument. I think I'm always going to fall on the side of throw yourself in there. Yet you'll break a few bones in your career. Now, I know a lot of young goalkeepers listening in, this probably isn't the best advertisement for being a goalkeeper, I appreciate. But look, at times, something like that may happen. But of course, if you've got such a desire to keep the ball out of the net, sometimes you just have to do what you've got to do. And there's going to be the odd 50-50 in your career.
Okay, we can't forget Robin Olsen either, still in for Jordan Pickford, who's out with that rib injury. The third Manchester United goal from Scott McTominay, the header.
Strange one. We watched this several times and I couldn't figure out whether he slipped, whether he just hasn't timed his dive, because ordinarily this is a step dive and you would think someone of his size would get there. Now, Robin Olsen, I've liked what I've seen so far. Now, he's very big, and of course, with every positive, there will be a negative. And I think with Robin Olsen, he's very big and he uses his size well, but of course, you're not going to be as quick, arguably, as some goalkeepers that might be 3 or 4 inches shorter than you. So I don't know whether it was just a case of mistiming it or slipping. I think in this one, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. And I think it was just a slip as opposed to maybe not being quite quick enough or just mistiming his footwork.
There is one more thing that I was going to read out, actually. And this was a tweet from Curtis Woodhouse, who's starting to get a lot more traction on social media, actually, and is a big critic of Aaron Ramsdale. Really doesn't like Aaron Ramsdale and keeps comparing him to Dean Henderson. It's ridiculous. But he started talking about goalkeepers quite a bit more, and he was talking about Alisson and Simon Tracy yesterday. He also spoke about David De Gea on Saturday, and he said De Gea had a shocker, and to top it off, in the 91st minute, he collects a cross, sprints to the edge of his box and pings it to Rashford for the counter-attack that got cut out. Zero game management, me, 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 from an experienced international. It's unacceptable. Now, when we watched that, I actually commented on the fact that I thought Marcus Rashford should have held on to the sidewinder, because it was a pretty decent sidewinder. He distributed it quite well, but then the ball came back. So at that point, it was like, where do we stop with this? Do we blame De Gea for trying to offer the counter-attack, or do we now blame the Manchester United attack for the fact that the ball's coming back towards him?
It's an interesting one. The fact that they conceded in the last minute, of course, you have to ask questions, because I think there's a certain mentality, you could argue, and ordinarily it was always the other way around Manchester United, years gone by, it has to be said. I think when it comes to mentality in the last minute, I'll always remember this from my time at Brentford under Mark Warburton, and his mentality, and I'm sure it's still the same now, was forget about the scoreline, continue to play the game the same way. And if you're in the 93rd minute and you're winning 2-1, see if you can win 3-1. Now, the thinking was, and of course, you know, some will listen to that and say, that's ridiculous, get it in the corner, count down the seconds, etc. But the thinking was, you don't want to become a team that takes the lead. You could be dominating a game, takes the lead, then all of a sudden the whole flow of the game changes and then you're defending for the next 80 minutes. And how often do you see that, where suddenly you've got something to protect and the whole mentality changes? So, look, again, only Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to know what instructions he's giving his players. So I don't think we can necessarily blame De Gea or Rashford, because it might be a case that he's giving similar instructions where he's saying, forget the scoreline, we keep attacking and we keep this mentality throughout the game. Now, if you've got two opposing mentalities here, that's where you do have an issue, where it might be that part of the team think we're getting it in the corner, we're going to run down the clock, and there's another half of the team are thinking we're going to try and score a goal, then that isn't going to work. But that for me comes down to management and what instructions you're giving your players.
Yeah, drives me mad. And we're slightly veering off goalkeeping, so we'll keep this very short. But Lee Hughes actually tweeted in as well and said, it's still Manchester United's fault for time wasting at 90+4. Then a sub, 91 minutes, to play down Fergie time, and Everton scored 95.25. And that's right, they brought on Axel Tuanzebe. And I said at the time, why are they... I can't stand it when teams do this. It drives me crazy for all the reasons that you're saying there. You're bringing on a defender who's cold, who's not up with the pace of the game. What happens? Axel Tuanzebe gives away a free kick, a yellow card, the free kick comes in and they score from it. I just think I'm with you. And a lot of fans, I think, are as well. And this is an uneducated opinion, I suppose. Many managers, many people working within clubs, many professional footballers would say you don't know what you're talking about. But why disrupt the flow and bring on a defender for a midfielder or an attacker when you are in control of the game to completely disrupt the game? And as we saw, an equaliser came in.
Yeah, and I think it's a fair point, and I think it's certainly a talking point that people are going to have different opinions on. As you say, bringing it back to goalkeeping, for me, and I do like the mentality that you do continue to play as if you're going to score more and more goals and you continue to play that positive way. I think once you hit 90... arguably it changes a little bit, or maybe even 85, where suddenly you're not taking a goal kick from the side that it goes out. The ball comes back to you. You are taking that little bit longer. I've got no issue with that. I think that's quite clever game management. I think as well, hitting areas of the field, you know, so I certainly think when you get to the latter stages, but again, that's just my opinion, and it's not necessarily right or wrong. I think a lot of that has to come down to how the manager tells the goalkeeper to play.
Let's have something to celebrate, shall we?
Let's do it.
Yes, why not? And where better to turn than Kasper Schmeichel? A big outstretched leg for him to save a draw and a clean sheet. Although I know he's not a big fan of those, so we won't dwell on the fact that he kept a clean sheet for those who have listened to the podcast. Sorry, Kasper. But a big clean sheet and a massive save for Leicester at Wolves.
Yeah, huge save. Towards the end of the game, 77, 78th minute. And it was one of those where quick decision, great decision in the end as well. Balls broke. And he's got himself out so quickly and got to maybe 6 yards out and executed the spread perfectly. And interestingly, this is one that we probably could have done a commentary corner on, just because the commentators, and I see also a couple of the posts that went out, were very much about the striker missing the chance and how he should have given Kasper Schmeichel no chance. And it was almost a case of, but we have to give the goalkeeper credit. Like, absolutely, you got to give the goalkeeper credit. That the lads try to put it in the bottom corner, and if it's not for Kasper Schmeichel's toe, it is going right in the bottom right hand corner. So it's not a bad finish by any means, but fantastic goalkeeping. Came out quickly, great spread, brilliant save, saved him a point.
Aston Villa 1, Arsenal 0. Matty Ryan not even 2 minutes into his debut and a goal conceded, but a good save in the second half, I think, from Jack Grealish. Solid all round, really, and nothing he could have done with the goal.
No, nothing at all. Deflections killed him. I think after that, as you mentioned, a couple of solid saves. Looks comfortable. And goalkeeping's funny, isn't it? You think of the fact that he's losing his place at Brighton not so long ago, and now he's starting in goal for Arsenal. And you never know. Of course, Leno will come back in as and when, but Matty Ryan is a very, very capable goalkeeper. And again, when you're that close and you show what you can do, your fortunes can change very quickly.
Bit of a quiz.
Oh, go on then.
Matty Ryan, he was the fourth goalkeeper, just the fourth goalkeeper in the Premier League to concede within the opening 2 minutes of his full Premier League debut for a club. Can you name the other three?
Oh, I've got no idea. Go on.
Very difficult. I would not have had a clue. Gavin Ward at Bolton Wanderers.
Okay.
Ian Bennett when he was at Sheffield United.
Yep.
And Daniel Padelli.
Okay, I wouldn't have got
of it. Liverpool. Okay. There we go.
I thought it was going to be one of those moments when you name a classic goal, but no, okay, fine.
But no, good performance really from Matty Ryan, and another good performance from Emi Martinez. He actually started the move for the Ollie Watkins goal. A lovely drilled pass out from the back and a nice save from a Granit Xhaka free kick.
I love this save. I love this save because for me, this was step, step, bang. And the way in which he's exploded into the top left-hand corner, the spring, the power, and he just glides. Like as he's landing 2-3 yards wide of the post, you know, when he finally lands. Just incredible power. And again, I think someone said in the commentary that he made it look easy, which he did. And this is a shot that's going in the top corner. Not many goalkeepers have the speed and power to make this save, but yeah, just fantastic.
There were actually three similar free kicks from the Premier League all the way down to League Two at the weekend. So as an added bit of fun, Richard, we'll get you to rate your 1, 2, 3 a bit later, okay?
Oh, we do like to have fun, don't we?
Tell you what, thrill a minute on the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Let's go over to the game between Brighton and Burnley. Nice from Robert Sanchez, denying James Tarkowski. Bit of a dive forwards.
Yeah, I like this. Brave goalkeeping. Ball's dropped sort of 2-3 yards from goal. I mean, James Tarkowski probably should finish the shot before. Doesn't quite catch it. Gives Sanchez the chance to dive out. And again, I just love the fact that he's dived into bodies effectively to get his hand to it. Interestingly, got a little bit of stick for the goal, which I wanted to touch on. And look, again, I think it's a very solid performance all in. I thought he was unfortunate with the goal. The obvious comment, of course, is, well, you got to parry wide. And you do. Ordinarily, I would say, yeah, really, he should try and shovel it wide. And I think he probably can. What I would say is that the shot has been hit with the left foot and it's coming in towards him. Now, goalkeepers listening in, I'm sure you've experienced this, where you've started to dive and you soon realise as you're diving, the ball's coming back in towards you. And I think that happens here because I think he starts to go to his left, realises the ball's not going to be as wide as he thought it was. So he's almost got his hand back to his right slightly. So to then shovel it to his left is not that easy. So at that point, he just decides to parry it out, but parry it with as much power as he can. The bit where he's unlucky is, of course, he goes straight to the opposition player and then he has the decision as to whether he drops on his line or comes out. That might have been the only question mark because he kind of gets mixed up with his defender at that point a bit. And I think he actually may be able to save the shot potentially if he had a little bit more space. But again, we're nitpicking, I think, there. So I felt a little bit for him with this one just for the fact that the initial shot did come back on him.
Okay, two more games. First, Alex McCarthy, the goal which put Newcastle 3-1 up in their victory over Southampton.
Yeah, we'll touch on this, and it's one where Alex McCarthy's played it out to the left back. Now, you could argue that he didn't quite hit the left back where he should, but it's a tricky one because he tried to play it in front of him for him to then run onto and of course, play. Now, I mean, look, he's marginally off with the pass, and we say this all the time, but if this is any outfield player, then, of course, that doesn't necessarily lead to anything. But in this case, it did lead to a one-on-one. He was never able to fully recover his positioning, and when the shot was finally taken, you could argue he was maybe half a yard out of position and made it a slightly easier finish. So it'll be a frustrating one for him. Look, I think in hindsight, he would have played it maybe behind the defender and been that little bit safer with the pass out to his left. That would be the only thing that I'd really touch on here.
And finishing at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, where Spurs beat West Brom 2-0, quite convincingly 2. We had a tweet in from Jack Francis who says, hello at GK Union, Johnston in the habit, that's Sam Johnston, of course, of diving the wrong way early in anticipation rather than trusting his reactions. Goals versus Manchester City, Fulham, Tottenham, all examples.
Yeah, I think he'd be a little bit frustrated with this because The only thing I can think is, as a defender's coming across, and we've touched on this before, defender's coming across, so he's potentially reading the fact that the shot's going to go to his left, and his body weight is certainly going to his left. But if you actually look at the shot in isolation, had he been set neutrally in terms of body weight on either side, then this wouldn't have been that difficult of a save, it has to be said. But of course, the fact that he is moving to his left, in the end, he's only able to get a hand on it, and it beats him in the end. I mean, in terms of what you do here, because again, goalkeepers will face shots like this all the time, where you've got a defender coming across and seemingly covering half the goal. I think ordinarily, rule of thumb, it may change your position slightly, but I guess in a perfect world, you'd try and keep your weight as neutral as possible. So yeah, I think this will be a little bit of a frustrating one for him. But as you said, I don't think it would have made much difference. Tottenham were, on the day, by far the better team.
Yep, and Hugo Lloris, a good game as well. A good save to deny Mbaye Diagne his first West Brom goal. That was the Premier League, Richard. This is the Championship.
Yes, that's right. It is time for the Championship rundown. We start on Friday night. Swansea running out 2-0 winners over Norwich. Of course, that means another clean sheet for Freddie Woodman. Tim Krul got a little bit of stick for the first goal here. For those that haven't seen it, it was a corner that has been whipped in, and it's one of those horrible ones where you've got so many bodies surrounding you. But seemingly, he got his two hands to it. The only thing I can think here was that he was potentially thinking of his next action or worried about those around him, whether he's going to get a nudge. Didn't quite manage to hold onto the ball. Did try to recover. Wasn't able to. And unfortunately for him, it did end up in the net in a 2-0 defeat here. We move on to Saturday. A clean sheet for both Daniel Backman and Marco Morosi, of course, his second game back since his broken cheekbone, wearing a mask. I had one of those masks. Do you know what? I actually had one of those masks when I broke my cheekbone, and before I was going to wear it for the first game, the day before in training, someone trod on it and broke it. So I ended up playing without the mask, which, to be honest, they're horrible playing in a mask. I don't know how Petr Cech did it for so many years, playing in the hat type thing. That was slightly different, though.
It was a hat.
Yeah, but still, it's so uncomfortable. Anyway, we're going on to a completely different subject here, but a clean sheet for both of them. A nice tip over in this one from Marco Morosi. The game between Barnsley and Derby was postponed. Bournemouth ran out 3-2 winners over Birmingham. A couple of really good saves from Asmir Begovic early on here. A frustrating one for the goal. Ball whipped in across the six-yard box. Wasn't quite able to gather it, and it was followed up in this one. Neil Etheridge with no chance on the three goals that he conceded here. Interestingly, we've actually had the stats in this morning from any of you that subscribe to Stats Bomb. You'll know about this. There is a goalkeeping table which does the expected goals conceded. And interestingly, Asmir Begovic is second in this. Tim Krul is first. I can give you a few other names if you'd like any other names, Matthew. Maybe we'll do that in a bit.
We can, but do the rundown and then we'll do it after, yeah?
Okay, that's so bossy. We'll go to the Bristol City. Ashton Gate we'll go to next. So Bristol City 0, Cardiff 2. Bit of a worrying moment here for Alex Smithies, who was down for a good 10 minutes or so and came off in this one. Dylan Phillips came on for his league debut. Played very well, clean sheet. Made a good save from a Henry Lansbury free kick. Moving all over the place. Parried it out. And then after that, very comfortable. No chance Dan Bentley on the two goals in this one. Luton drawing 1-1 with Huddersfield. Middlesbrough losing 4-1 to Brentford. Quite an eventful day for David Raya. We're going to touch on this in a bit more detail shortly, because certainly got a little bit of stick for the goal that he conceded, but some phenomenal saves thereafter. Millwall run out 4-1 winners over Sheffield Wednesday. Preston went down 2-1 to Rotherham. A good game for Johansson here, a big talking point again, something we'll go into a little bit more detail on shortly. QPR ran out 1-0 winners over Blackburn, a very good Senny Dieng save from a free kick here, getting across the goal, top corner, good speed, spring, athleticism, great save, and in the end, helped them win the 3 points. Stoke 0, Reading 0, two good clean sheets here, and Wickham lost 3-0 at home to Nottingham Forest.
Very good, Richard. Very good. Okay, do you want to get on with your tables?
I mean, I'm quite interested in it.
Me too.
And again, it's for people that do buy into the whole XG. And I would say that for goalkeepers, it isn't an exact science, because without being too geeky about it, it's done effectively on where the shots are taken from. And each shot is given a rating, and therefore if you make a save, you are given a certain rating per save that you make. But of course, you could have a shot from the penalty spot that could look very different. It could be a one-on-one, or it could be that the player's got their back to goal and they're trying to beat you with a back heel, and yet they're going to be given the same score. So I would say it's not entirely accurate, but of course, when you're judging over hundreds of shots that each goalkeeper's facing, then there is a certain amount of accuracy to it, and it is quite interesting. But yeah, the interesting thing for me was the fact that Tim Krul is top, Asmir Begovic second, you've got Senny Dieng in third, just to name a couple of others, Ben Foster fifth, Bielkowski's fourth, actually Freddie Woodman, all those clean sheets, is down in seventh, but again, that's still very good, bearing in mind there's 24 goalkeepers. So yeah, I thought I'd just make a point of that.
Nice. Perhaps we've got a whole new table to add into the podcast, Richard.
Well, people do love the clean sheet club. So I don't know. Do we call this the XG club? I'm not sure.
Okay. We'll be here for hours. Let's get on to some of the saves that you mentioned there. David Raya, what a game.
Phenomenal. I just think that, interestingly, he did hold his hands up and say that he could do better with the goal that he conceded. And it was an own goal in the end. So he's come for the cross. Personally, I thought it may have been a foul. Again, for a similar reason as we've touched on so many times in this podcast, that he was challenged as he's jumped. Yes, arguably he could be a little bit stronger. The ball's then come back, ricocheted off him and gone into the goal. So it was a David Raya own goal. But after that, some of the saves, just phenomenal. A couple of saves with his feet in particular, but the one, I think it was from George Saville, close in, the reaction to his left, just incredible. And again, I think it shows real strength of character to have something go against you so early in the game, only 2 or 3 minutes into the game when he conceded, and then to play the remainder of the game in the way that he did. And he made a point in his interview afterwards that he still came for his crosses, made a point of almost then over the top, you know, because they were putting the crosses in on him. And then after that, just kept coming and claiming them just to show how confident he is and how good he is at crosses, because that's always going to be the thing labelled against a goalkeeper that isn't 6'5". You know, I've had it myself. They'll always question you on crosses. And he has had a couple recently that haven't gone his way, but he comes for more crosses than any other goalkeeper in the league. So I think providing he keeps playing like that, Brentford fans will have that all day.
Okay, and the other one was Victor Johansson. Good save from Jason Malumbi and Tom Barkhuizen. And it was a big win, wasn't it, for Rotherham over Preston. But it was the goal conceded by Ched Evans. Another aerial challenge involving a goalkeeper.
Yeah, and the slight difference of this one for me is that when he's actually tried to catch it, he's effectively trying to catch it at chest height. And I think that changes things slightly. I think if you're coming for the ball and you are fully extended and you're being challenged when you're fully extended, and that then impacts and means that you drop the ball, then for me, that's a foul all day long. This one was slightly different because I think he's tried to catch it so low that it was effectively a fair challenge at that point, and they end up scoring and it was disallowed. And it's just interesting when you see that one that's disallowed and yet you'll see so many that are allowed that for me then should be foul. So I thought he was a little bit fortunate on that front. But that being said, he certainly made the most of that fortune, made some very good saves, huge win for them. And obviously he's come in, he's making a bit of a name for himself, making a bit of a statement. So all the credit to him.
Best of the rest.
Yes, Matthew, let's do it.
Okay, good work from Andy Fisher on three occasions in a draw between MK Dons and Sunderland. Aidan McGeady will be sick of the sight of him.
Yeah, brilliant performance. He won Player of the Month for MK Dons last month, and he certainly started off very brightly this month. And there were three very, very good saves. Just want to touch on the last one in particular, because it was one of these where you don't know which point to commit. The player's got the ball, and I think it was Aidan McGeady, has got the ball and was jinking left, jinking right, and he's in front of him. And at what point do you commit and make the spread? And when he decides to do it, it's perfect. Executes it perfectly. Last minute of the game as well. So save them the point. But yeah, once again, a very, very impressive performance.
And where we could have been talking about an epic Gavin Batsunu save for Rochdale, we are instead talking a bit about that right now, but also about the goal that came as a result of the second phase of play.
Yeah, you have to feel sorry for him. It was a very, very good initial save. Look, there's nothing more he could have done, and it is second phase of play. And actually, the finish is so close in. He's got no chance of making the save on the second one, but definitely credit for the first.
In League Two, Jokel Andresen and the Exeter defence left pointing at each other for a mighty mix-up in what ended up being a comeback win for the home side as Bradford came to town. You're already shaking your head.
Oh, bizarre. I look, unless Jokel Andresen has shouted at the defender to leave it, I cannot for the life of me think what the defender's doing. Just nonchalantly steps over the ball and allows the striker to have a one-on-one, and of course puts it away. And then the defender turns around, throws his arms up as if he was shouted at. Now look, if there was a shout, then yes, Jokel Andresen would have to hold his hands up and say that it was his fault. But I can't for the life of me think that he did.
The winner in that game for Exeter was a penalty conceded by Bantam stopper Sam Hornby. It was converted by Matt Jay and commented on by Sam Parkin on Quest, who said he being Hornby, really should save that.
Save the penalty, which is mental. Like, no, he's obviously on the penalty. Let's touch on that, the penalty itself, then we'll touch on the collision. he's tried to wait to see where the player's going. And in fairness to the player, it's one of these that he's waiting on the goalkeeper and he's put it the other way. Now, granted, he hasn't put it right in the corner. Sam Hornby does well because he waits till the last minute, but then just can't quite get enough of a foot on it, it was in the end, in order to keep it out. So no, I've got no issue with that. If anything, he gave himself a good chance of saving it. And my guess is not many goalkeepers would, because many would have gone early and made it easy for the taker. In terms of the penalty given away, yeah, in a perfect world, he'd have been a little bit more advanced and may have been able to head the ball, the through ball, that is. It's a tough one, though, because the ball's died a bit as it's bounced. He's then trying to wait for it to come into the box in order to pick it up. Mistime it slightly, and of course, how often do we see it? It results in a penalty.
A newcomer to the show, Shamal George, jumping for joy with a clean sheet on his first league start for Colchester and a late save with his feet to keep out Connor Wilkinson. It was his first start, I think, since September 2017.
Well, there you go. Interestingly, two goalkeepers, both associated with Liverpool at
indeed,
one time.
Richard.
Of course, Laurence Vigouroux up the other end, who had quite a quiet game, but again, racking up the clean sheets. In fact, he is top of the XG table for League Two.
There
you go. He's having an excellent season, it has to be said. But no, credit to Shamal George. He's had the odd loan, been here and there, and now starting to make a name for himself there. I know he's very, very highly rated. And even in this game, you can see that he's certainly got a lot of attributes for the very top level. So certainly one to keep an eye on.
Attributes, that's the word, isn't it? He's got the attributes. Jack Eastwood, a deadline day arrival on loan at Grimsby from Sheffield United, unable to leave Newport's Rodney Parade with a victory, but did make a very good save late in the day from Jake Scrimshaw.
Yeah, brilliant save. Good save with his feet. Came out well, made himself big. Very good save. Had a tough year, 2020, Jake Eastwood. Nothing his fault necessarily. Just had an injury, which was a little bit frustrating because it cut short his loan at Kilmarnock. But he's got another opportunity. Of course, it's with a manager that he was with previously and did brilliantly with previously at Scunthorpe in Paul Hurst. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on.
Crawley going down 3-1 at home to Harrogate, but always lovely to lord a landmark, Richard, that being a 200th appearance at the club for Glenn Morris. And finally, a double save from Carl Leatheran of Morecambe to thwart Matty Stevens of Stevenage. Also, a very good free kick save from Joe Martin, just like Emi Martinez and just like Senny Dieng. So we're here. The time has come. Please, you're 1, 2, 3.
I'm going to have to say, and it is a tough call because these are three excellent saves. And just to mention the save that Carl Leatherin made, yeah, it was very similar free kicks, as you mentioned, all left footed, up over the wall, into the top corner. He moved his feet very well, got up and made a good save with his left hand. I am going to have to say that Emi Martinez is number one for the sheer power and the fact that he was effectively horizontal, and the way that I'm remembering it was almost horizontal with the crossbar. I don't think he was quite that high, but just explosive power. I will go, it's tough between the other two, but I will give Senny Dieng silver medal, and I'll give Carl Leatherin a very respectable bronze because it was a fantastic save.
One was right-footed, but that's minor details, so okay. Not to worry about that, I guess.
That's you all over. Why'd you have to do this all the time? Clean Sheet Club. Yes, here we go. Matthew, something you don't know about me is that I'm actually a member of quite a prestigious club in London, one that's called Soho House. And I go to regular Soho Houses when they are available and have various meetings there. But you know what? It's nothing compared to this club. That's right, it is Clean Sheet Club. And we start with Emi Martinez, 11 in 21 since joining from Arsenal in September. Alphonse Areola, 2 in 4 in Fulham's fourth goalless draw of the season. Lucas Fabianski, a first in 5. Hugo Lloris, first in the league since the first game of the year. Rui Patricio, 2 in 4 after going without for 12 games. Kasper Schmeichel, 2 on the spin. Freddie Woodman, first in 3, but still top of the pile. Marco Morosi, 3 and 4, either side of that long layoff. Daniel Backman, 4 and 6 now since holding the fort for Ben Foster. Dylan Phillips, a first league start since the final day of last season. And a first shutout since 30th of June 2020, ironically, against Cardiff. Senny Dieng, 3 in 5 for him. Angus Gunn, also 3 and 5 either side of an injury. Rafael Cabral, hot on the heels of Freddie Woodman with 4 and 6. Bree Samba, 2 and 3. Moving into League One, Alex Palmer, 2-3 for him. Nathan Baxter, 5-9 since donning the gloves in league action. Jonathan Mitchell, 3 goalless draws in the Cobblers' last 5 outings. Ben Garrett, Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's switch of stoppers seems to have paid off with 2 in 3. Alex Cairns back in nets and back in the groove with 3 from 4. Joe Day, a welcome second since arriving on loan from Cardiff. Thomas Holy, 1st in 4. Christy Pym tiptoeing up the table with 4 and 6. Ben Amos recapturing that early campaign cleanliness with 2 in 3. Matthias Arkic, an impressive 6 in 9 for the Shrews stopper. Callum Burton, his first league shutout this term. Lawrence Vigouroux, 5 in 7 in an ever-present campaign. Shamal George, the first league clean sheet of his career in professional goalkeeping. And finally, Nick Townsend, keeping it clean for the first time since 8th of December last year.
Perfect, Richard. The table.
Let's do it.
Top of the pile, as you said there. Freddie Woodman on 15 in 26 games. Quite remarkably, in second spot now is Ederson. 13 clean sheets in 21 games. In joint third is Alex Palmer and Vaclav Hladký, both with 12 clean sheets in 25 games. And at the bottom of the top of the table is Rafael Cabral with 12 in 27.
Well, there you go. Some fantastic keepers up the top there.
Yep, there are indeed. I know we started with a caper, but we're going to finish with one too.
Well, if it isn't a caper.
So this was brilliant, and this went viral on social media. I'm going to read out the news report from news.com.au, where it said Aussie goalkeeper Adam Federici, well known, of course, to English football fans, has attracted international attention following a miracle moment of madness in MacArthur FC's draw with Western Sydney on Saturday night. Federici scrambled to produce 4 impossible saves in 7 seconds to leave some football commentators with their jaws on the floor.
It was phenomenal. And do you know what? It was actually the commentary that made it as well. Like, it was just pinball in the penalty box, ending with it smashing off the crossbar and eventually going to safety. But yeah, credit to Adam Federici. A couple of fantastic saves in the middle of this. Shows bravery as well at one point to dive out at the feet of one of the strikers. Just a brilliant few moments of goalkeeping. Also fantastic for the stats when you're making 4 saves in the period of 7 seconds. That's got to help your save percentage.
It was a really complimentary article, that, but the last paragraph I read. Early, Federici was beaten by Graham Dorans when he was sprung a mile off his line and the Scottish midfielder produced a sweet chip kick to leave Federici in no man's land.
Bittersweet, then.
We've always got to take a rough with a smooth. Richard, we're nearly at the end, but there's just one more name you want to bring up.
There is, and it's got nothing to do with goalkeeping, but everything to do with goalkeeping, and that is Tom Brady. I feel like, even though, again, it's got nothing to do with the Goalkeepers Union podcast, it's a name that we just have to bring up. 43 years old, just won his 7th Super Bowl. And the reason I wanted to bring him up was, one, for longevity, the fact that he is still doing what he's doing at the age that he is, which I think for goalkeepers, given the nature of our position, there is no reason, and I'm saying this as a 38-year-old who's been retired now for several years, but there is no reason why goalkeepers can't go on that little bit longer, a.k.a. Brad Friedel, a.k.a. Van der Sar, etc., etc. So I just think, as an inspiration and somebody that's not only doing it, but doing it to the absolute top of their game, you know, to go to the Buccaneers in the way that he did, and I'm a bit of an NFL fan. I wouldn't say that I'm a massive NFL fan, but to go to a new franchise like that and do what he's done is just phenomenal.
Yeah, and you say nothing to do with goalkeeping. It was a name that came up in the Kasper Schmeichel podcast. Yeah. Of course, it is a position that, if you are a goalkeeper, a quarterback in the NFL is not the worst position to analyse.
No, absolutely. So a huge well done to him. And I just think that for anybody out there, you know, you're looking for somebody who might help inspire, might help motivate you, look at this guy, look him up. I mean, some of the things that he's done over his career, just phenomenal. And he wasn't, from memory, like, he wasn't the first pick in the draft back in the day or anything like that, was he? Like, it wasn't expected that he would go on and have the career that he's had. He's had to fight so many different things, but just an absolute inspiration.
And really good in TED as well, isn't he?
Very good. Yeah. Very true, yes.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away!